Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World, where we are purveyors and conduits of hashtag fog monster music, hashtag radness, we're coming off of the summer episode, which puts us within our 3 to 4 week production cycle pretty nicely. And it's Dan Hayward over there and Matt Stranick over here with you. We're kind of doing somewhat of a dog's breakfast for this episode, I think it's fair to say. But perhaps, Dan, you might want to enlighten us a bit. And by the way, I hope you're doing well, Dan, as well as, the people out there are as well. Yeah?
Yes, yes. Well, thank you, Matt. But yeah, this episode, it's a follow-up. I guess it's a topic we've done done before, which is a multimedia episode. Like, just things other than music. I initially set out to do, like, some totally non-music-related picks, and then, of course, a couple of them kind of folded back into it. Which I'll get, I guess I'll get to those. But yeah, like I said, just like books, movies, like, just saying like a geographic area, a live performance. I have a video game in mind as well. And so just kind of like other stuff we've been digging outside of just like, whatever albums us old guys are listening to these days.
Which, let's be real, is the ongoing basis for the show. I definitely dig the fact that some 2 years almost into this enterprise, each year we're sort of pulling out something where it's this, that, and the other kind of episode outside of, guitar and or rap, ish kind of based formats, which is the awesome premise of the show, clearly. That's all cool. I haven't done any kind of notes in advance. I'm using my old school handwritten notes for this. Before getting into mine, I'd be interested in what you've placed. Are you doing yours with any hierarchical thing, Dan? Beyond the first pick being what it is there any why for as to why?
Well, I figure I figured I would talk about one book, a graphic novel that I read recently, a couple of podcasts, one of which I think I've talked about already, but, I'm going to throw that in there, a video game, a movie, and a live show that I went to.
Running the gamut. That's good.
Running the gamut here. But as far as the, I'll start off here with the graphic novel, which is one that I guess ties back into a lot of stuff we cover on the show pretty heavily, which is Nate Powell's graphic novel Fall Through that came out this year.
Right on.
Abrams or like a fairly like large publisher. And I don't know if you're familiar with Nate Powell at all.
Nope.
He's somebody that comes out of that whole like ebullition heart attack kind of scene back in the day.
High pedigree there.
Yeah. Little Rock, Arkansas is where he's from originally. He's in a band called the Sufi Nun Squad, and then also did like a lot of art for like bands and zines and stuff in the era, and then like transitioned into, a career in comics from there. I guess his most notable work that's won like a ton of library awards and that kind of thing was he did a series of graphic novel memoirs of John Lewis, the civil rights activist turned American politician from the South. I think he did something like four graphic novels about this guy.
So he writes and draws both?
Yeah, he writes and draws both.
Okay, awesome. Very cool.
And, for his most recent work, Fall Through, he sort of goes back to that whole, 90s hardcore scene.
Cool. You say from Little Rock.
From Little Rock, Arkansas.
Because Colin Brooks, who we interviewed for the show a couple months back from Sam I Am, is originally from Little Rock. And given the vintage you're describing, the 90s, you know, scene, yeah. I mean, that's exactly when he would have been coming out of there, Colin was, as well as, you know, it was apparently a pretty rockin' little bastion
there
in the South, unbeknownst to me. I mean, there's lots of stuff that's unbeknownst to me, but, I mean, it seemed, from what I gathered, just prepping for that discussion with Colin, I'm like, man, they made a movie about this joint and everything. I mean, it was pretty legit, right? So what you're describing,
exactly.
It's kind of like a wider milieu of stuff, right? That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's, I guess the best way I could describe, like if I were to draw a comparison to like another work, I would say it's almost like a 90s hardcore Love and Rockets. Complete with the kind of like magical realist elements in there as well. Because it's the story of a fictionalized band from Little Rock, you know, circa like 1993, 1994, called Diamond Mine. And sort of their arc from like, you know, starting as like a bunch of kids all living at the same punk house together to like starting to write a few songs and scrape together the money to put out a record. And, you know, they've got this one song that every time they play it, you know, things happen. And, you know, it sort of follows, you know, a very like realistic story of like, you know, these young kids with, you know, trying to like, you know, make art basically for the love of the game. Because it was not something where they would be, you know, there's a lot of like, you know, very realistic, you know, depictions of like sleeping on the floors of like shared houses after like playing in like behind a laundromat or something some night and passing a hat around. Yeah, like the guy really sort of he really captures the essence, I guess you could say, with it.
The moment was there like, to be captured in terms of its relatability, in terms of its that's something that I realize.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, my criteria for just about any art that I'm really interested in is the relatability factor, particularly as I get older, which means that I'm just kind of inward looking and introspective when it comes to my stuff. But what you're describing, I mean, again, that's just kind of like the narrative that we keep, you know, putting out our version of it throughout the life of this show. Right. So it's interesting the way you're describing that.
It's a really cool little story. And like, it kind of like things kind of come unstuck in time at different points, I guess you could say. And like, there's some asides about like the Sex Pistols' first show in North America and the effect that had on the 200 people that were there, regardless of the fact that they're basically watching a boy band, you know, and like making that point exactly. And it's a really great, you know, it's a short read. Like I read it in an afternoon, like it's only like 200, it's a 200 page graphic novel, like not that long,
nice.
But just like really like mostly black and white, really great. Mostly black and white artwork. But like I said, really like captures, like you can tell that, like, you know, it's drawn from lived experience and, even down to like, you know, fictional show flyers and that kind of thing for like these. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, you know, he offhand mentions bands that like, hey, I knew like someone from that band like stayed at my house when I lived and slept on my couch when I was.
It's so meta. It's just like,
oh, definitely.
The personalities are distinct, and if you're a fan of the music, I mean, it's just you know, when people ask, you know, like what the PhD thing is like, I'm just like, imagine that there's a field of about 60 or 70 people. And you're one of those people, and that's basically, you know, the limit of what your peer group is at a certain point. So when you're talking about, you know, like the punk of the era and the, you know, all of that ebullition scene and this and that, it's like, you know, you can, for those who participated like, or those who have awareness, it's just like, blink, like it just transcends needing to explain it because it just, the triggers are so there and so deep and ingrained. And seeing that literally written about as opposed to musical format sounds really compelling, dude.
Yeah, it's like there's even like a big splash page that's all based around, that's also centered around all of these central characters singing along with a Rites of Spring song, like on the stereo. What? You know, it's just like it's like I said, it was just like, and I'll have to find it. I'll have to try and find a link for it and put that in the notes as well. But I know that Nate Powell put out a little like list of his like mixtape to like, you know, like, yeah, like the musical lookbook, I guess you could say, sort of to set the vibes for the set the vibes for it of just like, you know, a lot of bands from that era that would have been, you know, have like one or two records out and like mostly playing shows where they were sleeping on the promoter's floor, you know, and fighting for the couch with the guy that normally sleeps on the couch after the show, like that kind of thing. And like, yeah, it was just like a really cool little read. So yeah, I wanted to include that on my list. So
yeah,
Fall Through by Nate Powell.
Awesome. No, man, that the way you described that, I have, you know, just as a, speaking of stuff that I've randomly managed to keep, you're talking about graphic novels in black and white. I got a copy of The Trial by Kafka as done in graphic novel format, which I'm saving that for just the afternoon to tuck into that because it's a very rewarding format, you know, the graphic novel. So I guess for mine, I'm sort of looking at things more in terms of aggregates, more in terms of baskets. So for those who don't necessarily know about any of my stuff outside the show, one thing that's happened is that I left New Brunswick, where I've been working for almost a year. And for the past month or so, I've been traveling. I spent a couple of weeks in Kamloops, where my kids are, visiting them. And now I'm in Fort McMurray, where I'm starting out as an English instructor for Keanu College, which is the local institution here, the post-secondary. What I found is that, you know, there's I've ended up giving away or, you know, losing or whatever, pretty much all media physical stuff that I own. But then weirdly, some of it has kind of boomeranged back to me just vis-a-vis stuff that was at my kid's mom's place. And she's like, there's no reason for this to be here. So in that spirit, well, the first basket, I suppose, that I'm looking at here is summer movies. I watched a ton of movies in the cinema. And the reason for that is I've got two teenagers. I've got a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. And it's like, well, what can you even do with them at this age? You know, it's like, what, like take them to like amusement park, take them to a splash pad? Like, no. You know, if you leave them to their own devices, one kid's just going to play basketball by himself for 3 hours and play with his phone. The other one's just going to play video games and read comics. So, I mean, like, that's their life. So for me, it's like, well, what do I do? You know, just they haven't seen me in a year to be kind of relevant. Speaking of all the, dads who aren't where their kids are. So I'm just like, let's just keep this as simple as possible. And so we just went to literally every movie, the Cineplex, and then also at the Paramount Theater downtown Kamloops. You know, we just meet up with the boys, catch a film, have something to eat, maybe hang out with the dog, and, you know, just sit around the hotel, basically. And so within that, the movies that we watched, because we just made a point of going to all of them that looked like they'd be any good. Despicable Me Part 4, and Holy God. I mean, it's just those minions, like I got Google AI to come up with a minion punk concert and it was Happy to Oblige. And, good Lord. I mean, I'm just talking about the most fun I've had. I mean, I wasn't even stoned. I went into that just, you know, cause I was with my kids, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to smoke a joint before I go in. Kind of be kind of cheesy, right? So, but I was just in stitches. I mean, Steve Carell, just in and of himself, you know, and the team of people. If you look at, like, the list of people who are on it, I mean, it's like, God, that's like a legit, like Stephen Colbert. I'm like, which of these mopes even is Stephen Colbert? I mean, I have no idea. But it's like, you know, so for me, that was highly rad. I also, in terms of rad films we watched, there's a really cool budget-ish horror film that was out. Wasn't around that long. Long Legs. Featuring Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
In the most fucking unhinged Nicolas Cage ever. performance. Have you seen it, Dan? Have you checked?
No, that's a movie that I definitely want to see soon. Damn. Actually, it's on my list of things to catch when I get a chance. You know,
Nicolas Cage, when there's a point when he's in jail and he just does incarcerated, like sitting in a chair, the craziest fucking Nicolas Cage thing I've seen him do. And that's saying a lot. Like, it was maximum. He's only in the film not even that much, but pow. Also, we enjoyed Quiet Place Day One, first whatever the hell it's called, because that's a franchise. Lizards with enhanced sound that eat your face if you trigger them. We watched Deadpool and Wolverine. Did you watch Deadpool and Wolverine yet?
I have not seen that yet, no.
Again, I went because of kids. I went on the friggin' first day, like the previews day, just because that was where we were at. We were running out of movies to go to at that point. Saw it in 3D, packed theater. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I'm not a fan of superhero movies. It's beyond Jump the Shark, but the fourth wall stuff, the self-referential humor, the self-deprecating shtick, to me, it landed because I'm a fan of comic books since I was a child, right? So for it's done from a spirit of fandom that you can tell by all principles involved. And then in the Repertory Theater, we took the boys to see The Hills Have Eyes. Classic, not the remake, like the original.
The original, Wes
Craven's second movie, right? Like brutal, yeah. Grimy, fucking just like. That movie is friggin' intense. That was the only one of these films where I'm like kind of looking over at the 12-year-old going, you okay, buddy? You know, like the second time the chick gets raped, you know? Also at the same theater, Good, Bad, and the Ugly, fucking A, right? Friggin' A. So now the kids know a little bit more about why Clint Eastwood is so badass. And the sound on it and the foreign actors means you, like even the dialogue, it's kind of, you need subtitles, which, you know, they didn't have. My kids were just like, I didn't really know what the story was about, but it was cool. And the last thing that I saw with them on Amazon before we left, before I bolted from Kamloops, Eddie Murphy Raw, the sequel. Oh, God. You know, yeah, on Amazon, right? I'm just like, what can I even show on the hotel TV? I got my Amazon Prime onto it, and I was looking for Delirious. I was looking for, like, the leather red suit. They didn't have it. I had to pay for that. So I'm like, meh. And, again, I got teenagers, and they got it. I mean, they even were like, because some of the jokes, I mean, it's like, he's talking about Michael Jackson. They didn't know about Bill Cosby. So that was like, I had to pause. All about Bill Cosby, right? And then, do you get it now? Do you see why that's funny? And they're like, yeah, but that's fucked up. And I'm like, I know. It's so anyway, and now I'm not watching movies at all because for me, it's just inherently a thing that I do with my kids. So Dan, I hope that you have enjoyed at least a few films this summer. But if not, then, there's still time. So
yeah. Actually, I might as well jump to a different spot on my list after this because I had a feature film that also kind of led to a short film as well, sort of in the wake of it, featuring one of the people involved in the big movie. That is the movie that I saw recently. Like, I don't know. I tend to watch a lot of the same old crap a lot of the time.
Sure. No shame in that. It just
happens. Yeah, exactly. I'm a rewatcher. So I really try to get out of my, I try to push myself to see stuff, something new, especially like not to be like, I need to see all the homework movies, but you know, this like sometimes you want to see some fucking cinema, you know, like, and so a couple weekends ago I rented, I saw the TV Glow, the recent movie by Jane Schoenburn, I think is the director's name, who also did a really good, creepy kind of one of the few well done, like movies that takes place mostly through an internet interface, I guess you could say.
What's the name of this film that you're talking about?
The movie that I'm talking about, the movie that I was going to talk about was I saw the TV Glow, but the director's first movie, We're All Going to the World's Fair, is okay. I guess it's one of the few good movie, really sort of interesting movies I've seen that takes place through like an internet interface, because it's filmed in like, it's like an indie movie filmed in like 2020, 2021. Cool. About like a live streamer who takes on a challenge that just sort of makes shit get weird. And yeah, that was James Schoenberg's first
movie.
Sounds
like Black Mirror-ish, kind of?
Yeah, kind of.
Contemporary dystopian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like really taking advantage of the form of like how they were able to present it, where it's mostly like one person's kind of almost like confessional videos while all this shit is happening.
Sounds cool,
with,
man.
Like,
sounds very
video
cool.
Conversation. Anyways, but their newer movie, I saw the TV Glow that came out this year, is like, it's the story of two people that were friends when they were young. It sort of jumps back and forth through different time periods through the movie, that centers on sort of two friends who met, I guess, in high school. And you know, bonded over a shared fandom of like sort of like a Buffy-esque TV show. Who, you know, after one of them disappeared and like some things happened, you know, that person reappears like decades later, and you know, just sets the other main character, who's played by Justice Smith, who's actually in one of my favorite movies in 2023. That's a completely different. He was in the Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves, which was one of my favorite movies of 2023, and much better than you would actually think it would be. If you're,
it's got
of, like,
one of the Chris's in it, doesn't it?
That's, it does.
Yeah, and that's what I know about it. It's got Captain Kirk, Fat Chris.
It's a you know, it's
Pine.
A
Pine.
Yes. It's an action comedy fantasy romp with a lot of like, with a lot of practical effects, and just like feels like a fun 80s movie kind of thing.
For the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Yeah, I like that kind of vibe. But anyway,
yeah, that's legit. That's,
yeah,
some good old PG-13, you know.
Yeah. But for I saw the TV Glow, Justice Smith's performance is a lot more just like silent horror, I guess you could say. And actually, there was a great, what I could only describe as like a jump scare of rancid vibes by Connor O'Malley, who is in, he was part of the Chris Gethard show that I've talked about on the show before.
Okay.
And is on, I Think You Should Leave, the like Netflix, the sketch show on Netflix. He was in a couple of their big, like, well known sketches on that show, like the It's Friday Night song one. And, he was in part of the Calico Cut Pants. Anyways, that guy, he just has like a very small part in it where he's just a total fucking creep in like a minimum amount of lines delivered.
Well done.
And
bravo,
it's just like,
sir.
He's one of these people. It's one of the, like, Connor O'Malley's really one of these people that just, he's just sort of starts showing up in just like random little things here and there. Like he was on Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. I don't know if you saw that at all. And just like a lot of small roles like that. But anyways, he plays like just like this awful, like, you know, he plays Justice Smith's boss and at the movie theater that he works at, and is just like, yeah, just this complete, like, the minimal amount of time on screen is just like, ugh.
Really leaning into being a bastard, eh?
Exactly. Which, like, when he was on the Chris Gethard show, he would always, every character he played on that show, I swear, it was just like covered in something. You know, just some kind of like real or like implied greasiness.
Nice.
But yeah, and it's just like, it's just like a very, I saw the TV Glow, it's like a very visually stunning kind of like, you know, there's more going on than initially implied, but is it, you know, sort of, do you want to take it on, look at it in like a fantastical level, or, you know, sort of, it's, and like, yeah, like it's like a very cool, interesting, like, interesting movie to check out. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. Pretty emotional. But yeah, that also led me to a short film that Connor O'Malley made around the same time, that's available on YouTube, called Corey's, which is a 12-minute, I guess, kind of horror comedy, that it's the story of a guy named Corey who, while on a trip to Target with his wife and kid, is looking through his phone and keeps finding videos from another guy named Corey.
Oh, no.
Who looks exactly like him, who's living this completely debaucherous life in Las Vegas.
I like that premise. I like the dark twin or the doppelganger.
Exactly. I mean, that's
been taken up, you know, variously, yeah, as you well know, by various authors across the centuries, even. When you're talking about, like, I'm thinking of, like, Dostoevsky, right? Like, the double.
Yeah.
Or things like that. So that's a very cool, like, contemporization of that trope.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, the direction it goes in is not what I expected when I first saw that premise. And yeah, like, it goes in, like, an
so
almost Cronenbergian
like
level at one point.
Like
it's like a 12-minute short. Just called Corey's that you can find on YouTube. I'll link
minutes.
It in the notes. That's just like that. It's funny. After it came out, the director of I Saw the TV Glow retweeted it with the caption, I'm going to tell my kids this was I Saw the TV. You know, this is I saw the TV Glow. But it's just like, yeah, Corey's the short film by Connor O'Malley is definitely, it's one of my picks as well. Because it's like, it's just like a perfect little, just 12 minutes of creepy fucking goodness done by someone that like is just really good at, like, you know, the kind of alt, I guess, sort of almost anti-comedy that just, like, you know, leaves you feeling bad as much as you're laughing in his own little ways. But yeah, so those are kind of my double sort of like cinema picks of I Saw the TV Glow. With also the short, you know, the short feature accompaniment of Corey's by Connor O'Malley.
That sounds highly rad, all of that. And just, this isn't actually a pick that I have, but just to sort of, while we're on the contemporary cinema tip, Ty West is a currently amazing director behind the three features, Maxine, with Triple X, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen Maxine yet, but
So
I've
like
seen
X the first
and Pearl.
One, right? Pearl is a sequel, but it's actually a prequel to the events, and both of those, I just was like, this is so like campy, and yet so effective on every level. And I was just, I was like, I was gonna see Maxine with the kids. I was gonna take them. But then the day that I wanted to was like, it was only in the theater at Cambridge for like 2 weeks. It disappeared, you know, pretty quick. Gosh dang, that's looking forward to that one. Oh, and Bike Riders.
Directed by the brother of the guy from
Ben Nichols' brother. Yes. That's right. Ben Nichols' brother who, actually has a song on one of his records, on one of the Lucero's records, You Can't Live This Way, called Bike Riders. And every year, Ben goes out on tour, including in, like, right now, literally, on the Bike Riders tour, where him and his two or three, you know, contemporary, whatever, similarly aligned acts go out. And it's freaking cool. Like, and I can't, I'm bailing on the brother's name
is it Mike Nichols?
I think yes it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Because he made that awesome film, Take Shelter.
Yes.
Which is just friggin' brilliant. That's like Michael Shannon's best acting role, like, out of all of them, quite frankly. So those are two, like, I mean, I don't know, man. Speaking of cinema, now, something else that I have discovered is, besides, you know, in terms of just, I don't have any possessions except for some stuff that I've accidentally clung on to. So I got books again. And so just in terms of this, I speak about Marcus Aurelius on the education show all the friggin' time. But on the music show, not so much. So I'm really just kind of like, well, this is just a book that I have been reading since January of last year. And like when I'm done, about a month or a few weeks go by and I just pick it up again. I'm on my second copy of this really awesome Oxford translation, which is cool because it has all these sort of contextualization stuff in the back. And it's just a really good, fluent translation. It feels very organic in terms of, you know, from the Greek of the era, second of the, 100s era, you know, Greek as on the frontiers of the Roman Empire where Marcus was writing at the time. But what I really found this summer, which has just added to that, is this awesome annotated edition by a really legitimate scholar. So I normally, when I'm reading, you know, any kind of academic-ish kind of stuff, I don't like footnotes. They piss me off. I'm like, just don't do that shit. You know, have a thing of references at the end and be done with it, motherfucker. But in this case, it's like the footnotes are given all this really sick, detailed, historical, contextual data because it's like, this is, you know, it gives you a sense of like what the day-to-day life for this dude was like as he's describing it. And I mean, for me, for just in terms of having a passing, you know, kind of interest in history, I mean, I'm along for the writing. I'm along for the, you know, I'm along for Marcus as a writer and as a thinker and as an individual who somehow is writing shit that is highly relatable. But the history is just kind of icing on the cake. But in fact, the history as presented in this book with the introduction and with the notes that go along with it are just knock it out of the park for me. It just adds so much richness to it. So that also goes along with my sort of ongoing interest in Stoic writers. I got this How to Die by Seneca, which I read last summer, actually, springtime. Managed to get this somehow back from the possession of my kid's mom. I don't know how it even ended up there in the first place. I got a pretty rad book about the gold experience following Prince in the 1990s by Minneapolis reporter and writer Jim Walsh, who wrote a really awesome collection of reportage about the Replacements. The oral history, he wrote a book, just an interview, you know, which a lot of he did. And, yeah, I don't know, the last, there's a few other things, you know, that's neat. Fitch that Han. I always got to make sure I keep this, the portable Fitch neat Han. I just kind of keep that along with the Marcus to kind of keep me going. Again, I got this from the kid's mom. Somehow I managed to keep a hold of Mark Lanegan, the singer, the late singer for the Screaming Trees, as well as a prolific, talented, amazing folk and every kind of pop artist, actually, you could want in terms of his solo stuff. And this is a collection of lyrics, so in written form, because he actually writes lyrics that are like, it's like Nick Cave level stuff for my money. In fact, I like it a lot better than Nick Cave. I find Nick Cave's kind of tough to take sometimes in terms of a listening experience. But I can listen to Mark Lanegan pretty much any day of the week, any time of day. Just having the lyrics in here, but then additional writing. To my mind, the dude's a very compelling writer of prose, fiction, and the lyric format. So that's most of some of the books that managed to get reaccumulated despite my best intentions, despite the fact that I literally left a suitcase full of books in a friggin' dumpster in Kamloops rather than have to drag them to a hotel room because that's how messed up my initial entry into Kamloops was. But I digress. So books, read them, folks. I'm an English teacher. I have a vested interest, but I'm saying give them a read. Take a look. It's in a book, A Reading Rainbow, Dan. Ah. So what do you got for your next one, bro? I think I've covered at least two of my things there, really, yeah. Honestly.
I was going to talk about a couple of podcasts here.
Sure, bro. That's awesome. That,
yeah, go in a couple of different directions that the related things we've touched on earlier today. The first one is it's some of my highbrow listening, I guess you could say, or what I consider some of my highbrow listening, which is a podcast called Horror Vanguard. It's hosted by John Greenaway, Ashley Darrow, and Kyle Kern, who their academic backgrounds are like a couple of them are more sort of like postmodern cultural theorist, like literary history types. And then Kyle Kern, who's sort of the newest one added to the team, is a labor historian. But they all share a love of like horror movies, both sort of modern and classic, and like the works of like Jacques Derrida and Mark Fisher, and also magic mushrooms and, you know, weird comedic tangents every once in a while. And like, it's just a very engaging, interesting listen.
Awesome.
Where, you know, the like, they could be talking about like an old Herschel Gordon Lewis movie, or like the most recent episode is about Anaconda.
Like the song Anaconda?
Well, no, like the 1997 Jennifer Lopez, John Voight, of course, Ice Cube film.
Anyway.
And I do know, I'm sorry for stepping on the joke there. But and every episode, like I said, they'll pick a movie and so to look at it, like first they'll do a little pricey sort of talking about like sort of the movie, sort of the general themes of the film as they exist, usually as they exist in like the larger cultural context at the time, or current times, and kind of pick it apart and just like a very poetic, like they're, yeah, like the Pricey. I was going to include like a clip of one of these like Priceys they did about John Carpenter's The Thing. They'll kind of pick it apart on like a formal level, and then, you know, start bringing in their different academic theories, and like I said, like the a lot of, they're coming from like a pretty deep lefty perspective, like from that postmodern theory end of things. Like that was my first introduction to like Mark Fisher and like the concept of ontology. And that kind of stuff came from listening to these guys talk about, like, you know, Twin Peaks Firewalk with me.
How many episodes are they in at this point?
I think they're probably, like, the most recent. Yeah, the Anaconda episode is episode 335.
That's, like...
Been going for quite a few years.
I see some of these things that are out there, and I'm like, I'm just... We're on episode 61 of the education one, and into this we're in the 30s now, and I'm always like, yeah, man, we're doing pretty, and then like, oh yeah, 300, oh yeah, 500 for this. It's like respect for getting there early and occupying the space, you know. That's awesome.
And yeah, like one of the hosts, John Greenaway, who's also like he's like a professor at like some school in Northern England. Nice. Also just like, he just published a book that's, you know, called The Capitalism, a Horror Story. That's his like academic look at, like capitalism and Gothic literature. And it's just, but like taking those kind of perspectives to go on like goofy tangents about like a shitty movie with John Voight and Jennifer Lopez. while also, just like using that academic background to just go on like ridiculous riffs and like, you know, sort of add much more much more implied subtext than may have ever been there for some of these movies, but just, you know, in a fun but theory filled way. And, you know, I'm not so much one for the book learning all the time, but it's, you know, some very engaging. Yeah, like some pretty engaging, entertaining hosts talking about, like, you know, stuff that I like. It's
academic people talking about non-academic shit, or talking about shit in non-academic ways, is like the whole, you know, motivation behind what Doug and I are up to with the music, or with the education one, right? So everything you're describing sounds like it, you know, pretty much lands on certain elements of what we're aspiring to, you know, on our thing. So always nice to know that there's quality people out there in the format, well ahead of you, kicking ass, doing cool things. So that sounds rad. What other podcasts are you speaking to here, pal?
The other one I was going to talk about is one I can't remember. I think I've probably talked about it on the show before, but I'm going to mention it again anyway, just because, like I said, it's a consistent, entertaining listen for me. And I resubscribed to their Patreon, so I've been listening to some of their bonus stuff, and nice. That's the first 7-inch club, which I believe I've mentioned on here before.
I think you have, yeah. That last, yes. I remember it specifically. In fact, I don't even have to guess.
Yeah, and so that. Like, yeah, and I mean they're like pretty well known, I guess. But like I said, it's in certain circles anyway. But like I said,
so
it's
what's a couple of guys. So what's the Patreon thing? Is it? I mean, for me, I think it's cool. Yeah. So many artists are doing the Patreon thing. And as somebody with a credential in a field called educational technology, I just think the whole, like, you know, every artist that I've spoken to in an interview just about has some Patreon or Substack or something. So, you know, yeah. as a human being, for me to sort of commit, you know, what even just the $10 a month kind of level subscription, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a significant, you know, vote of confidence in an artist. So you are really, you know, this is serious stuff, right?
This is
so
also what
about it? How's the Patreon offering relative to the general offering?
Well, for theirs, I mean, for the general podcast, they do an episode a week where they'll pick usually a fair, like sometimes obscure, sometimes not as obscure. They'll pick a more well-known record every once in a while to get listeners like they did it, like the first Earth Crisis 7-inch recently, as like a pull to try and you know as a big name to draw some people in.
That, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Rather than their reviews of like the some like local Albany band from like 1993 that they all knew and are worried about are going to hear the things that they're making fun of them about years later, but yeah, they started doing on top of sort of these regular weekly episodes where like they'll take a record, they'll review it, they'll go through it track by track and just to talk about whether or not it's worth remembering, I guess you could say. Well, and like, you know, sort of going through it from the perspective of two people that kind of, you know, they were there the first time around and, you know, they know their stuff. And one of them's like, one of the hosts, Scott, is like a professional graphic designer. Cool. And that's always something that they'll address with the records. With whatever records, it's like the design, especially the design tropes at the time that people would fall into. And yeah, it's pretty entertaining. And for their bonus Patreon content, they have like a $2 level where it's like you'll get the you'll get the bonus episodes a little bit after they publish.
So rather the $2 than right away. Level, like why not? Like it's yeah. $2. It's a toonie. Come on, you tool.
But
it's
a toonie. And for their bonus content that I've been listening to recently is they've done things like they did a two-part episode where they reviewed the VH1 Metal A Headbanger's Journey documentary nice. Series. And they've got a little mini series on the Patreon called Equalizer Punk, where they review TV shows that had punk rock episodes, especially like, you know, police procedurals and that kind of stuff. And like they did the episode of WKRP where, you know, the hard rock band caused a stampede that, you know, caused like all this like public chaos and like that kind of stuff.
Sounds like some pretty solid content.
Yeah, the last one they did was the day my kid went punk after school special. And I'm
Good
sure
Lord.
They'll get.
Yeah, I'm it's sure all true. Get, it's all
yeah,
true. All
exactly.
It.
And so it's just like, yeah, like pretty entertaining. Like, yeah, just to look back at some of this stuff. And yeah, like they'll do little, like they did an episode, like one of the guys did an episode just about like his trip to the Wisconsin State Fair and all the weird food he ate there. And just like little stuff like that on top of their, yeah, they're talking about like,
have
all these,
cell
like obscure
phone,
90s
have
hardcore records.
Will travel,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Because
yeah.
it originally grew out of another a podcast that they had, a different show that they had called Border Boss that was a Taco Bell review podcast. It was basically they reviewed Taco. They said they reviewed Taco Bell and cigarettes and like, you know, that kind of stuff. And just like general bad food, and then you know that spun off into them talking about old records, and then they shifted it to this podcast about old records. And yeah, again, that's one of my, like, every Wednesday, that's like one of my weekly listens. So yeah, just for the opposite ends of the spectrum, I guess, of, in some ways, you know, my like highfalutin literary, like horror movie deconstruction podcast. And then the like two guys goofing on like emo records from 30 years ago. So yeah, that was my next bit of parapics.
Well, I think those are both highly rad. And I realized kind of looking at my remaining kind of aspect of the list here, since we're, you know, 45 minutes into this thing. And I think probably, so what I'm going to save speaking to for the notes is the fact that I am an English teacher again. And that in starting on Monday, this coming Monday, I'm back in the land of the full-time employed. So I found out that I'm going to be teaching for the first time in my career, like actual literature courses. Because what I was doing previously when I, the last time I taught English, like 10 or 15 years ago, was like technical writing, which is awesome. But it's like, you know, letters, business correspondence, reports, that kind of thing. Well, in this case, it's literary criticism. For people who are in college and looking to sort of transition into undergraduate study, right, at a university. So within that, I get to put together a syllabus and teach, you know, based on, you know, former colleagues or I guess colleagues who were there, but I've taught it before. I'm teaching like four sections of this one class. So I got like a prep. I got four preps. I got one prep for four classes is what I mean. And in teaching terms, that's rad because you don't have to like have, you know, different sets of content for your thing. You just need the one set of content for four classes and then just teach it four times, which is cool, right? In my opinion. So I'm going to have a little blurb in the notes about the joys of the syllabus. And it's funny. You mentioned sort of that you threw in that little Kurt Vonnegut reference at the earlier in the show, and I was thinking that's funny because actually I'm going to be teaching Slaughterhouse-Five.
Nice.
And I'm going to be teaching a Kurt Vonnegut book, and gosh dang, my English teacher heart is just like motivated here by that, because how cool is that to be at that point? Anyway, for me. And I also am going to be doing a section in the notes about Fort McMurray generally, because this city has just completely blown up and confounded all the stereotypes that I have had about it. The only thing about it that's really holding out is that everybody in this area is somehow connected to the oil and gas industry, including me. I'll be, you know, that's including me for sure at the college. And pick up trucks every goddamn place, just every friggin' like, man, it's just a bit speaking to the multimedia experience of Fort McMurray. But the last one for the purposes here of the show is I lost all my records, but I got back a shite ton of CDs, like a shite ton of them. I counted them. I gave up all my records, but somehow during the madness of just impulsive spending that I was doing to kind of placate myself that my career was cratering and my marriage was ending right around the same time, my investment in music was pretty lit, apparently. So I got 300 CDs, compact discs, and a little boombox that, you know, it has a cassette player and a CD player and no Bluetooth. It's one of those, and an AM/FM radio. And so just as a sort of sample, I just thought I'm gonna go into the random bag here and just sort of see in terms of the tenor of what I've got in terms of music. So I am shoehorning a little bit of music in here. I'm just going to randomly grab five, and I'm curious here, you know, what I gave to myself. So what do I got here? I got Dizzy Gillespie, Groovin' High Jazz Time, which is clearly an official release. No bootlegging there whatsoever. But, you know, it's like, why not? It was $1.99 at the store, at the Value Village. I got Hootie and the Blowfish, Rear View, because I don't give a goddamn. That guy can sing, okay? The singer guy who's now a country star, he has some pipes. He knows how to write a song. He has some pipes. Fuck all y'all. Hootie is fine. And, like, really, Darius Rucker, right? Being a black guy in the country music space, like, in the 90s? Whatever, man. Take some gumption and talent. Leatherface, Dog Disco, their second last LP. People give this one not as much respect, I find, as they ought to. It's fucking lit. They're fools. It's on BYO Records. I wish I used to own that on vinyl. I don't anymore, but I still got the CD. Gaslight Anthem, American Slang. Gaslight Anthem are kind of about as mainstream punk as you can get. They're pretty, I would even say, mall punk-ish. You know, they're about five rungs down from Green Day, but boy, would they like to be Green Day. And for my money, they got two perfect records, including this one. Brian Fallon's done, you know, the Horrible Crows record, which is awesome. So three perfect records out of that dude. And whatever, they're touring and stuff. And Fighting, Thin Lizzy, because fucking I love Thin Lizzy. And if you don't, then I don't even know why you'd be listening to the show, actually, if you don't like Thin Lizzy. So that's just from, that could have, from the BC Liquor tote bag full of CDs, of which there is an identical two others, right? So I'm going to end with that kind of shoehorning of five compact discs in as my last official choice of this broadcast. What else do you got? You want to throw in here, Dan?
Well, I had
before we end things down.
Two more things on my list that I'll just kind of quickly rush through here.
Yeah, sure.
One of them is a video game because, well, back around 2020 or so when I ended up spending a lot more time at home, I ended up getting into playing video games again. This particular game is one that came, it's sort of celebrating a 1 year birthday, I guess. It came of its official release after spending several years in development, and that's Baldur's Gate 3.
Okay.
Which it's, I guess, for people that know this sort of thing, it's not. Yeah, it's
I am not one of those. It's, so explain okay. It as broadly it won, as possible.
Basically, it ended up it's a game produced by a company called Larian Studios. That's a they're I guess considered like a smaller, like more independent type studio that ended up getting the license to the Dungeons and Dragons Forgotten Realms campaign. Ooh. Setting.
Awesome.
And a video game and the Baldur's Gate series that was like. The first two came out in like the late 90s, early 2000s, something like that.
So Baldur's Gate, this is like a fantasy,
it's a,
sword
the name
and sorcery
of a city in this.
Gonna...
Yeah, it's sort of a it's the game is literally like, what if we just put Dungeons and Dragons in your PS5 or video
okay.
game playing of choice?
Cool.
Video game playing, but like not just like let's take a fantasy setting where you can say pick your character class, etc. It's like let's build in a robust system. Governed by, you know, random number generation that's displayed as like an actual D20 spinning on the screen.
Ooh.
When you go, like when you're walking
nice.
Around, you'll see a little dice spin and see, you know, when your character's walking around, sometimes your little dice sound and you'll see perception check failed and you won't know what it was that you didn't notice when you walked by because you didn't make that roll. And it's, like I said, it's set in, you know, a sort of on the way to getting to this sort of fantasy city of Baldur's Gate. And you end up sort of getting kidnapped by a bunch of weird squid, psychic squid monsters who put a brain worm in your head that's supposed to turn you into one of them eventually, but it doesn't. And you escape. You end up meeting a series of people who had a similar experience, and then you try to get these weird little brain worms out of your head, and adventures ensue. Like, it's the kind of thing that I realized since this game came out a year ago, I've put the equivalent of, like, several weeks at my job worth of hours into a few different playthroughs of it, just because there's just so much to it. Like, I picked it up again recently, like, a few weeks ago, and just kind of played it through to the end again for probably, like, It was probably like my third or fourth time playing it straight through to the end, but I've kind of started and abandoned a couple other playthroughs. Just because there's just so much to it, and like you can just completely miss things or decide like, oh, I don't really want to like follow that person's whole side thing. But like this most recent playthrough that I did, there was just like a bunch of stuff that it almost felt like a new game. Just to the point of like, hey, I never went over there. Hey, there's like another hour worth of content where I just like ran into like.
And to be clear, this is not like an open world kind of
game. It is fairly open. Well, it's there's like three acts to the story. Each act takes part in a different area. And it's like open during that time. You know, it's like, you know, if you've ever played like a tabletop role-playing game like Dungeons & Dragons, you know, you create a character. They have a job. They have a general background. I like
the adherence to game mechanics, right?
Yes, and it's very much
as a reference point. That's cool.
Exactly, and like they very much like it's all done like according to like the whole game is built around the like 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons rules and mechanics.
See, as a narrative nerd, I love that shit, man.
I don't know how many tens of thousands of lines of dialogue based on different choices, and like. Almost every big fight has a way it can be talked out of, even if it means making a deal with the literal devil it's that kind of thing. Or like you can, and like you end up meeting, there's a series of like kind of like main side characters that you meet along the way that you can bring along with you. You know, you can bring up to three of these characters with you at a time while you're going around on your adventuring. And Ooh. Each of them has like a pretty robust story arc of their own that you can like, you know, one of them is like a wizard who, because of like a relationship gone bad, has become a human bomb like with like a suicide mission effectively to take out this giant brain monster that is like at the center of it all. Yeah, it's, and I mean, like I said, it's your standard, you know, sword and sorcery fantasy narrative, like set in like a particular Dungeons and Dragons campaign setting, but just the most like painstaking and loving recreation of that you can get for, you know, $80 from the PlayStation Store.
sounds very cool. I mean, again, anything that gets people motivated or engaged with narrative. I mean, like for me, I mean, I barely watch movies. I almost never watch TV. Video games are just not part of my menu. But at the same time, like my kids are into that. And, you know, anybody who, you know, like describing playing through a game of that, you know, kind of for four times or whatever. I mean, that's just like, you know, picking up your favorite novel and have another go through at it. You know, it rewards persistent, you know, checking back, which is,
exactly,
you know, the hallmark of good literary art of any variety, media or otherwise, right? So I think that's awesome, man, the way you're describing it.
Exactly. And the way that the narrative's constructed, it's not like you're taking, like, you're just taking the same path every time. Like, you can decide, you're going to decide with the other side, you know, sort of the quote-unquote bad guys completely. And there's an option at the beginning that you can choose. Instead of making your own character, you can pick a pre-made character that has their own very, very kind of like dark like side story that ties into like a murder cult in the third act that otherwise, you know, wouldn't be approached in the same manner. And just like that almost turns into like fantasy Dexter or something like that, just as like a little sub narrative built into this other general. And it's, I guess what they did was they had the first act of the story was available as like a beta, like sort of beta test version that people could play just while they were working it out for three or four years at least before they launched the whole thing. And it's, the video games industry is something where, you know, sort of treatment of workers is not something that is like, it's like Larian Studios, they almost got, that was caught heat when this game really sort of took off in popularity, and over the fact that like, this is people realizing like if they just take their time and treat their employees well, they'll make some, you know, they can make something really like deep and robust and interesting and engaging, like, and rewarding, like, even with multiple playthroughs, rather than just like, okay, here we do this, and, you know, you're going to work for 20 hours a day until it's done. Right. That they seem to have treated their employees, you know, pretty fairly, like, while working on the project. And, yeah, it's just, it's like a rare example of like, hey, these some generally good people also made something nice that's good and interesting and like well done, and not just like, hey, that's a well-intended thing that I will buy because I want to support you. And then it maybe doesn't stand the test of time as much. That just, you know, with a year of like I said, I've played through this game several times. And, you know, it's been like interesting and like a little different every time. I figured I'd have to mention it. Yeah, Baldur's Gate 3. Yeah. And also on the opposite end of that, because I don't just, well, you know, even though I do spend a lot of time at home playing video games, I actually went out to a live show recently, awesome. Which was actually canada.gov.ca, the Instagram page, sort of a purveyor of, say, regional Canadiana type memes. He did a live show in Halifax recently. Okay. He was also in town for, he was in the general end of the world because he was doing a show at Sappy Fest as well. And I was just kind of curious what, like, a live show from, you know, a guy that runs an Instagram page would be. Right. And it ended up being, like, sort of a mix of like kind of storytelling and jokes and comedy. The guy who runs the page is from Fredericton, actually.
Whoa.
And, you know, I think he's like in his late 30s, but, you know, very steeped in maritime culture.
Awesome.
And this live show that he did at the Marquee in Halifax, it was like, you know, he had some stories about Anne Murray. And like, it was almost like doing like a live PowerPoint presentation. But, you know, he had like, you know,
he's a raconteur of sorts.
A raconteur, that's it. Yeah. That like, yeah, part of it was, you know, about his like interactions with Anne Murray over the years. Then there was a bit on Rita McNeil and her clashes with Cesis in the 70s because of her, you know, sort of feminist activism back in the day. Right. And then also like a whole thing about like Fisherman's Credit Union, the history of Fisherman's Credit Unions in the Maritimes. But, you know, it's just mixed in with jokes and, you know, also like just like showing memes on the big screen. And yeah, I think he had the Rankin family playing in the background almost the entire time just to amp up the maritimeness of it all. But it was pretty entertaining. And yeah, just as far as like pulling off a live show version of, you know, what's just sort of a social media resource, I guess, you know, it was a pretty fun time. And worth checking out if he's ever in your town, the canada.gov.ca sort of traveling storytelling show. But yeah, like, so that was my picks, really.
Well, that's fabulous, man. There's a whole lot there to unpack, I think, as always, but really we're, in the downward side of the summer, in as much as we're less than a month away from, we're 3 weeks away from Labor Day, actually, the Labor Day weekend. So, I mean, we're as much as we want to, you know, contend otherwise, the summer is de-escalating. It's moving as it inevitably shall.
Yeah. We're already catching strays from passing tropical storms here in the Maritimes. So, you know, it's we had a bit of weather from the rather phallic shaped storm that went up the coast recently.
My mother told me about a storm, but she didn't mention a phallic shaped storm.
That was the weather image that kept getting circulated. Huh. Was the weather tracking, it just looked like a dick looming over the, like, just barely passing Nova Scotia. But, you know, we still caught some wind and rain this weekend. And it's just starting to feel like, you know, have some candles and cans, canned goods on hand season out here. So, yeah. Anyways.
Well, things to look forward to and contend with.
Yes.
I personally am enjoying my summer thus far. It's been interesting from my standpoint. I don't really have anything else to throw in here other than what I would probably throw in the notes. The only thing is that, I guess just to speak to it publicly, is that I recorded a really awesome interview with California writer, San Diego writer, Jim Ruland, who I talked about on the show a lot in terms of his books, including with Bad Religion, including with Circle Jerks frontman, I'm tired is where that came from. Keith Morris, he's also written a novel, which we talked about. So I've been sort of between children, airplanes, hotel rooms, and everything else. It's just all I got to do is just get the notes there, but I just haven't quite got it, you know, mentally the bandwidth for it yet. So, Jim, if you're listening to this, it's coming out like as soon as I can, probably today, probably tomorrow, not today. God, definitely not today. But yeah. Otherwise, you know, things to look forward to, right? So, I suppose that's it for me. Dan, you got anything else here, pal?
Other than just like, I've definitely been enjoying the Olympic breakdancing this weekend.
I'm a fan of women's beach volleyball, and yeah, Canada won silver in that. Men's basketball, women's beach volleyball, those are like my two Olympic sports. I mean, so.
Canada got the gold medal in men's breakdancing today, actually.
What?
But I don't know if you've seen the latest internet main character that came out of that competition, the Australian cultural studies, 37-year-old cultural studies professor who was somehow managed to be the representative from Australia, who, you know, writes academic papers about breakdancing and decided she would do it herself. And it's like, just like, what if they let a Kristen Wiig character just do the Olympics? If you get a chance to check out I'm sure by the time this comes out, it'll be old news and the internet will have moved on to something else new and horrible. But yeah, if you need a laugh, look at Olympic breakdancer Ray Gunn's performances.
Circa August 10th, 2024. So yes. If this comes out in a week or whenever we get the notes out, you can Google that shit. Okay. So
yeah,
you heard it here first.
Somebody definitely talked their way into something kind of performance that is worth checking out for checking out. Anyways.
Kudos on the hustle for that. My God. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it for me. I guess that's it for Dan. We're out of here. Right. Take care, everybody, and see you around next time. Bye for now.
See you around.